Blog Talk Radio.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Jasagonige, Will Bluewater, a 7th grade grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous plant-based native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's a 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's a 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Beginning of Part 1. Please refer to program notes for the scheduled date and time of Part 2. Thank you for supporting Prophecy Keepers Radio with your tax-deductible offerings to the Oklava Native American Church of the White Roots of Peace.
Hello, everybody, from Booger County in the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America. This is Prophecy Keepers Radio coming to you, and this is Blue Art. And we've got our old friend Red Elk with us this evening. We're really privileged, Grandfather Red Elk, to have you with us again. I guess it's been since February, and it's long overdue. And I understand you've got some things you wanted to tell us.
Yes, this is correct. And Blue Otter, thanks for having me on again. And, the first one was kind of funky. I couldn't get to see hardly anything. I kept getting interrupted by something. Well, but hopefully this will go better. That I would like to share with the listeners who I am, what tradition is about, what the inner Hioka is about, and under the authority of who I work. And I've been out here for in the area of 5 years publicly, you know, worldwide. I get a lot of that's what they think, and I feel I have no enemies. It's just misunderstanding. But nevertheless, you can't convince everybody. But I noticed a lot of people, mostly in the Puebla, the First Nations people, they seem to have a tendency of, there's no nice way of putting it, they have a tendency of being able to write and being able to talk, but seem kind of limited in their reading ability. taking some very stabbing, accusations. And without test cause, as far as I can see, if they would just read on my website, instead of word of mouth, that word of mouth gets bent out of shape. And, first off, my name is, Dr. Shishke is one of the nation's way of saying Red Elk. And that is my name. It is my legal name. And I have a family name, too, actually. One Native American that's passed down through my mother's side. And another one, white, that my mother forced us to take. My mother was raised in a time when Indian was deemed to be Indian, was to be worse than a black man and the derogatory name of the black man during those times. And she wanted nothing to do with being Indian. And she walked around telling everybody that she was an Egyptian because of her high cheekbones and all that. And forced the family into whitening. That was my mother's problem, not mine. I'm Red Elk. I want all who are hearing to make this permanent in your ears. I am not a Mr. Red Elk. That is not a surname. I have only one name, Red Elk. No first, no last. And it, I am related to none of the Red Elks across our land of North America. I know Mr. Red Elk. And naturally, because I've got the name Red Elk, they come at me and a little bit angry. I'm using their name. Well, my gosh, do the whites jump on Mr. Smith for using their name? Do they jump on Mr. Kanaska for using their name? The Indians are kind of crazy. I know Indians from many nations who in the past were literally enemies of each other. And they'll be done if they don't have the name Red Elk. Names are just names, period. And they're open to everybody. In my case, it was given in ceremony. Understand that. This is my ceremonial name. And legally, I have changed it to my ceremonial name. I've gotten away from the white name, totally. Only about five people, my wife included, call me by my white name and shocks me to hear it. And it's just the way it is. And I will not give it out. You have no reason to have it. And I am who I am. And the name is, again, lock this in your memory, please. The name is ceremonial, given during a naming ceremony. And at the same time, not one that I was any too pleased with, it, to be honest. I thought it was rather a dumb name, and it was a full 12 months before I found out the meaning behind the naming. And now I am quite honored to carry this name. And I will share this now. It was flat faces, but I can only tell you what it is. That Black Elk spoke of the coming of the white man in his way, intersecting. I am Red Elk. I am the opposite. I am telling and intersecting the way of the red man's road into the black man, or the black road, the white man's way. We are to share with one another. This is why we, the Native Americans, South Americans, North Americans, Canada included, have been given the sacred thoughts and the sacred holdings be shared at this time. That is what Red Elk, this Red Elk, this one, is all about. Now, I am a medicine man. I am a spiritual advisor, whatever, kind of like a preacher, I guess. Hold a moment, please. And it is untraditional to tell people that. that is Jesus' idea, as far as I'm concerned, out of all of them. It's called inner Hayoka, or Hayoka. I also am a member of the Hayoka Society. I am a member of the Red Web Society, an honorary member of the Jesuit Caretaker Section of the Crystal Skulls. And just an honorary member, nothing special. And nevertheless, the society that I was invited into, and the most important society, as far as I'm concerned, is the inner Hayoka. I doubt strongly if there are more than four people in North America, very, very old people, that have even heard of such a thing as the inner Hayoka. Many, many, many know of the Hayoka. And by the way, I have gotten reports that I'm not this, I'm not that Indian, so how can I belong to the Hayoka? My brothers and sisters, hear me true. The Hayoka are not limited to one or two nations there. They have Hayokas in just about every nation that exists in North America. So, those who think that just because they have Hayoka, they're the only ones, you're all wet, frankly. And, like it or not, that's a way of it. But, inner Hayokas are, well, like I say, there are probably four, maybe only three people that have even heard of this society. And this has been an ongoing society for over 2,000 years. Always limited, originally 13, but since the original, always limited to 12. All are extremely long livers. I myself have been told I will live to an age that I'm not comfortable even thinking about. And well beyond what man lives to today. And I can kind of believe it because, as I said, the inner Hayokas are all very long, long livers. And, well, let me tell you a little bit. First, I think I have to tell you about me, this one, Red Elk. This one does not like to call myself I, and I'm this one, trying to overcome that I. I make you important, and I'm not important. This one makes me simply one of us, one of you. And that's the way I like to be. Just one, just someone, no one special. And, well, this one was born in Ellensburg, Washington State. That's Eastern Washington. And though I cannot recall my baby years, when inventing it, yes, but not concerning this. Though I cannot recall my baby years, I do recall a North American Indian. And from the age of about 2 years old, I can actually recall this gentleman. We lived in a rodeo town, and lived literally right next to the rodeo grounds. And the Yakima Indians would come down. No cars, they had no cars, no trucks at that time. But they did come by horseback and wagon and walking. And they would come and knock on our door and ask permission to camp on our land. And always the permission was granted, despite my mother's likes and dislikes. She did have a respect for people in general. And the camp would be set to many Indians. Would be there and playing their gambling games and preparing for the rodeo, usually 2-3 days before the rodeo began. But during this time of camp set up, everything settled down. A day, 2 days later, pockets. And that was it. Nothing else. Not even a feather in his hair. And no shirt over his chest. It was blanket, loincloth, and moccasins. And generally, he would carry a grouse or maybe two rabbits or maybe two or three grouse or whatnot in one hand. And occasionally, a stick. This was his throwing stick with which he would kill these little beans for food. And this gentleman would always come to the front door and stand a few yards or feet away from the front steps. Never go to the door knock. And one of us kids, there were five of us, we would somebody would run and tell Mom, Mom, she's here. And Mom would jump to the door and look out, and he would nod at her, and she would nod at him and shut the door, and he would turn around and go to the outhouse and shut the door behind him. She would come out with a brand new or fresh blanket, knock on the outhouse door. The door would crack open, and he would pass out his blanket and his loincloth and take her blanket. She would then wash the loincloth and the blanket, and she would rinse it and wring it out as best she could and flap it in the wind, flap these items in the wind, then go back with these damp things. And knock on the door would open, she'd hand that in, and he'd hand out the blanket that he'd sitting there with. And he would give her the food that he had collected on the way down for her services and for the family. We never heard this man speak a word of English. We all, including my mother, had no idea he could, or if he could. But the gentleman would then close himself and walk off into the camp. And the camp would suddenly become very silent, and people would line up and make a Red Sea's party. Some would go to the left, some to the right, and he'd walk through the middle, and there was the greatest respect, of nodding of heads and recognition. And after the rodeo was over, everybody pulled up and would go home, including Chief. In short, we never saw Chief, except for that one time when he jumped out. Now, I can remember this at 2 years old. I can remember this at 3 years old. I can remember it at four. But on my fourth year, something was different. He did as I have just told you. And then the rodeo was over, and it was time for everybody to break up and go home, and they were doing so. Again, he never returned. This time he did. And it kind of shocked all us kids. And we ran and told Mom. I think my little sister ran and told Mom. And my older sister, too. She was out there, and she opened the door and looked out and started wringing her hands. She was afraid. Something was wrong. This was not in place. So she came out, and meanwhile, we kids, we kind of stood off to the side a little bit, afraid ourselves. We'd never seen she do this. And Mom looked at him, and he nodded at her, she nodded at him, and then he turned around and walked over to the fire of his kids, who were kind of cringing there. And they all kind of separated, all of us, and suddenly I was alone, you know. Everybody else had kind of gone their own separate ways and standing away from each other, and myself included. And the old chief walked up to me, and he walked up to my left side and turned around. He looked at my mother, and in perfect English, he said, as he put his right arm across my right shoulder, you know, from behind, and he looked at my mother and he said, "One day this boy will grow up and do many great things amongst his people."
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
Oh, see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
And then he placed his hand on my head, on the hair of my head, and looked down at me, and he had this most wonderful smile on his face. And it was just love. And he took his hand off, turned around, nodded goodbye, and left. My mother just stood there, actually wringing her hands, really literally wringing her hands. What did this mean? What did this mean? And, well, from that day on, my mother was quite afraid that I would grow up to be Indian. She didn't want anybody to be Indian in her family, including herself. And she had plenty to worry about. I never knew I wasn't Indian. But nevertheless, anyway, as said, I always thought I was Indian. And in fact, I was quite a bit Indian anyway. But Mom, as I said, she wanted nothing to do with that. She gave us white names. And we all went by white names. Then we legally made white names. And, but nevertheless, as I grew from a little boy, we moved at the age of when I was four, very shortly after the 70s. We moved to Detroit, and I spent most of my youth in Detroit, in and around, you know, Ferndale, Utica, Hazel Park, Rosemont Woods, and so forth. And, but always I was Indian, as far as I was concerned. I went to school to the ninth grade, and I only went 34 days of that ninth grade. The rest of the time I was constantly skipping school. I learned how to read, I learned how to write, I learned how to spell sufficiently, enough for people to understand. I'm a terrible misspeller, but nevertheless, I learned the basics, and I felt personally, even at that youthful age, that was all I really needed. And as it turned out, frankly, credited with my bank account and so on and so forth. And I can write letters and sort of, kind of, if you can understand my writing, my shorthand, as well as the spelling. But I do okay. I didn't need to be a rocket scientist and have all the algebra and stuff. And they weren't teaching in the schools the things that I really, really hungered to have. The things of the spirit, the things of Mother Earth, the things of the Indian ways of old. And so I went out and I started learning these things all on my own. And we had a terrible joint officer. He was the fear of the whole school system there in Springdale, Michigan. But he could never catch me, not once. Got everybody else, but he never got me. He never thought of going to the public library where I'd be sitting studying the old ways that I could find. He never thought of going into Detroit proper and going behind the Ford factory and this factory and that factory where the little creeks ran with oil and spare tires that are all ripped up and old refrigerators. And I'm not exaggerating. And that's where I was, tracking, chasing huge deer, and they're still around to this day there. And fishing, getting enormous fish out of these oil-laden little creeks and stuff. I don't know if they're edible or not. I never had them. I just wanted to practice catching them. And trapping, pheasants, and things like that that didn't know how to make the traps. I can't tell them. I couldn't find any books on it. Figure four traps and deadfalls and so forth. But I did know rat traps and mouse traps. And I set those and I killed many, many, many birds and stuff that way. And very rarely did I get more than feathers because the town cats got them before I did. But nevertheless, that's what I was doing. I was sleeping in the culverts when there was no rain so that I'd be outside and hidden and covered. And, you know, my mother never knew where I was at or when I'd be home, poor woman. Never knew what I was doing. I couldn't tell her. She hated Indian dumb. Indian dumb, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, not dumb Indian, but Indian dumb. So much that I couldn't tell her that I was following and learning the old ways. I never once told her. In all the years that my mother lived, not one time did I tell her. Now, at age 10, at the very beginning of that 10th year, I was given the two necessary dreams to be a medicine man. And it was at that same age that I began my teaching. I'd say in a lot of high years, this one began his teaching. Is learning medicine. And the very first thing that I was taught was how to levitate. And I was taught at that time to, once you learn it, you park it. You never use it again. Once you know you've done it and can do it, once you test the teachings to find out if they're true or false and succeed in doing it, finding out if it was true, and it was, by the way, then you park it and you never do it again until you are told to do it. Therefore, I am not a show-and-tell teacher. I am not one with that kind of an ego. And I am a disappointment to many because I will. This one just simply will not show you. Who are you? You are not the Creator. When the Creator tells me to do these things, I do them. I do not do them as some will of a man, some will of a woman. I do it only when I am ordered to do so. You hear me now? I teach how to do these things, and if you are serious of learning, then you test them until they become fact in your life as they have in mine. But I'm not going to show you, not unless the Creator informs me that I am to do. basically me. I spent 41 years learning medicine. When most will spend those 7, maybe even 12 years, and the Cherokee up to 17, I understand. I spent 41 years learning medicine, medicine of North America, some of South America, some of the Maoris, and the Hawaiians, some of the Africans, some of the Finland, some of Russian steppes, a little bit here, a little bit there. 41 years of learning, long, long time. And not being able to share it with anyone. Just learn, learn, learn. In those 41 years, the Creator spoke to me and said, I am going to turn you over to the black side, the dark side, the satanic side, to be completely honest with you, the witches, the sorcerers. And he said, you will think I have left you, but do not doubt that I am with you. And I said, sir, why are you doing this? Why is this going to be? And he said, so you can know the enemy. And I spent 8.5 years learning the enemy. And I know the enemy well. I know the ways of the sorcerers. I know the ways of the witches. I know it, boy, and I know when it's used against me. And I know how to counteract it. I am thankful for 8.5 years of darkness in my life. 8.5 years of feeling that the Creator had abandoned me, but holding to His word that He's there. But I tell you, it was not a pleasant time. And I have learned some very, very wicked ways. Not one time did I apply those ways to anyone. I just learned them. And I have not applied them yet, and I have never applied it since. I just learned it. So when it comes against me, I recognize it. I know its source. And I know we can overpower it and overcome it. And I do not fight fire with fire. That just destroys the forest. No, I fight fire with a more powerful thing. I fight it with the thing that I have found. This one has found is the most powerful thing in existence, short of the Creator Himself and the three that are one that He is. Love. L-O-E-E. And it is love beyond anything that this old man can call forth. It is love beyond anything that this one can manifest. It is a love that had to be worked on, had to be learned, and I'm still learning. It's called agape love. That's a Bible word. I don't care what you think about me using that. No better word for it than that. That's forgiving. I mean, it's all forgiving, pardon me. And it is just accepting. It's loving. Despite what the enemies do, it's loving. And it's irritating to the enemies. And hopefully, and I have noticed occasionally, it turns to friends from these enemies. It turns them into friends. And eventually, occasionally, rarely, it turns those friends into the same way that I call purity, the way of the Anahyoka. So, there's a little bit about me. Now, I'd like to share the Anahyoka. First of all, I'm going to light a cigarette, so let's stop for a moment, please, brother.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
3, 2, 1. The Anahyoka originally consisted of 13 men, North American Indian men, who followed and learned it from the knees and the feet and their dance with one man. This one man was called the Bell One, the Bell Teacher, and his name, the Son of God, Christ, to the rest of the world. Understand this, I'm not Mormon, I've never been a Mormon. I don't like your proselytizing and trying to make me Mormon. Don't care for it at all. And I've never been to a Mormon church, but that's your way. I'm not against a Mormon being a Mormon. I'm not against an Indian being a traditionalist. I'm not against a Muslim being a Muslim. But nevertheless, I have never taken to the Mormon's way of teaching, other than that the Christ was here in North America. And the original 13 learned at his feet. He came over here on one of his uncle's ships, who was trading with the American Indians, not so much in gold, a little bit, but then a little silver, but basically for copper. And they would sell their ships long ago up into as close as they could into the Great Lakes, and then they would trade with the Indians. The Indians were not slaves. The trade was a fair thing. They would go and work when they wanted to, collect what they wanted, and when the so-called Bell people came, they had a stockpile and they would trade. It was a good time. It was a fair time. And the Christ came on one of his uncle's ships, who was a well-to-do man, evidently, and he and one of his brothers, another uncle, evidently shared business together, and I think they were two different companies, but nevertheless they helped each other out, and both were based in trade and transportation. Anyway, he came here to learn what we, our people, the native people of America at that time, had retained from the original time, the time of the two, the original two, the ones the white called Adam and Eve. And he also came to share what he had learned in other places other than the Hebrew land. He went all over, from what we are told. Went to India, Tibet. He went all over. He truly hungered to learn and to know the ways of the Creator. And he came here to see what we had that he did not know of, and what we had retained, and to share what he had been given and taught and learned himself. Well, in those days, there was no medicine man. There really wasn't even a medicine woman, but the women were the healers, not the men. And the women, being so close to the earth while the men was out hunting the big game and stuff, the women were out picking plants and cutting themselves and so on and so forth, and finding plants here and there that did a good job of healing this and healing that. And there was the beginning of medicine. It was women, not men, that could take care of a wound or whatnot, a good hearty cough in the lungs and stuff. They've learned over their years and passed down. Also, they had retained from the original mother of all, Eve, if you would, and at that time period. And so too had our men retained some of that knowledge. But nevertheless, mankind, Indian mankind, eventually, you know, they looked over mama's shoulder and grandma's shoulder and auntie's shoulder and learned a little bit about this plant and that plant, and eventually in their machoism they kind of took over, and stupidly in their love, women let them. Until today, you got these people called medicine men, and they think your boss, there's medicine women, but they think they're boss over the medicine women. This is going to change. It's not a matter of gotcha. It is going be no ifs, ands, or buts about it. There will be unity. Man and woman will be equal in medicine. Once again, women will no longer take place in the back circle. They will be in the great circle at the front, doing an equal share with the men. And the men will learn to let that be. The men will learn to let that go, because they are equal to each other. There is no back seat anymore.
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
I can't help my looks. I I'm not only white, I'm old, and I'm not only old, but I'm ugly. I can't help my looks. Number, you are darn sight uglier than I am, and you're red. And you can't help your looks. And most of everybody else is, including you, are darn sight better than this old guy. But it doesn't matter. We had no choice on the body that we were going to come to her again. We had no choice. You did not choose your mother and father and your lineage. But you act as if you did. But this is wrong. No, you are a new you. The Creator wanted you in that body and that skin, whether it be red, white, purple, green, plaid, yellow, whatnot. He made that choice, not you. So don't get heady about being a redskin or Muslim or white guy, white superiority. Don't get heady. That is just plain stupid. It just shows you haven't got to have a brain. That's all. But anyway, my brothers and sisters, 13 people followed Christ across all of North America. That included up by the Alaskan Native Eskimos, all the way over to the Greenland and a little bit beyond Eskimos on the East Coast, zigzagging back and forth, and down into North or South America, learning, teaching. And the 13 followed and learned as he taught. People after people, band after band, tribe after tribe. And they learned a lot. If you want, you could call them the 13 apostles, the 13 Indian apostles. We don't. But if you want to, if that's the way that you want to think it, so be it. But you know this, we do not do this. But, I love my cigarettes.
Uh-huh.
But, anyway, then one day he said, okay, I'm going to go. But I'll be back. I'll be back. You know, Arnold Nickelberg or whatever his name play. But, nevertheless, he did leave. And for 212 years, throughout South and North America, there was no band-to-band warfare. No nation-to-nation warfare. He brought total peace from Eskimos to South Americans and in between. We learned to trade. Oh, there was killings. Don't say there wasn't. With, you know, little family squabbles or something like that. And with no gathering of great war parties and going at each other. But in time, as this 212 years slipped by, he didn't come back. And 212 years is both a long and a short time. It's a long time as you live in it, and it's a short time as far as history goes. But it doesn't take long to take an event and turn it into mythology. And that is what has happened here. And the Aztecs and the Mayans and so forth, they who worship the sun started worshiping the S-U-N when before they returned to the east from whence this S-O-N had come and gone and worshiped. But in time that got lost. And they've heard the stories about his sacrifice, his death, his blood, and they twisted it. Started sacrificing humans on a stone, three vast numbers, trying to emulate the great teacher, the Pale One. Now on the East Coast, they're well all over American Indian. There's a story of Thunderbird, the East Coast mythology about this tailwind called the Christ. The burning where the all-consuming death. He was burned by wood as Christ was killed on wood, a wooden cross. And the all-consuming never can come back death was broken. And he rose again. Pequa, thunder curtain. Jesus the Christ. And in the plain state, we had the sun down. I've asked many over the years, many people of importance, many people that if I mention their name, you know, but I won't. I've asked them, what does the Sundance mean to you? And I have gotten from every single individual this, a most beautiful meaning, but never identical. Each has their own meaning. And I asked them, would you like to know what I have found in the Ayahuasca have found the Sundance to be? Yes, always a reply. And I would proceed to tell them, in the old days, as today, things have changed a little bit in the Sundance, maybe more a little bit, but still basics are there. In the old days, when it was time to do ceremony, to give honor, and to do great prayer, the elders would get together and they would pray about it and they would find the place that this was to be through prayer. And they would call their scouts and the scouts would go out in all directions looking for the proper tree to be planted in a great circle for the Sundance. And they would come back and report, I found this tree, I found that tree. And the elders would pray about where to go to look at this tree or that tree. And they would get their answer. And they would go to this tree and that tree, a number of trees. And they would look these trees over and they would gather together at that tree or beside close to that tree and pray to the Creator and this tree to be the tree. Until eventually they would find the okay, the tree. Then they would send for runners or send runners up for young men to come to this place and to bring a young virgin girl. And they would do so. They would have a number of young strong men come. And sometimes these trees were 2-3 days away. Not very often, but sometimes they were that far away from where the circle was to be made and the dance was to be. Anyway, the young men would come, and the virgin would come, and they would dress the virgin in an all-white high dress, and they would give her a tomahawk, and in later days, a metal axe or hatchet rather. And the young men would go and denude the tree of all limbs, except at the very, very top, where there was always left a sprig of green. Naturally growing. Then this young woman, they would do prayer and ceremony, and this young virgin girl, woman, whatever, today it's kind of got to be baby,
yeah.
Terrible, but nevertheless, she would go screaming at this tree and strike it 3 times. 1, 2, 3. And her job was done. And then they would cut the tree, and they would line the men up in the way the tree was to fall. And these men would catch the tree before it hit the ground. And on each side of the tree. And some of these trees could be quite long, 60 foot or so. And remember, they were green. They were heavy. And then they would head off towards the great circle prepared. And there would be relays of men, never once allowing that tree to touch the ground. Then they would bring it to the great circle, and with great fanfare and prayers and ceremony, they would plant this tree into the very dead center of the great circle. And then eventually, those who were praying would tie lines of leather or horsehair, today other types of lines, to the tree up towards the top. And and then when the time came, they would pull away from these skewers and rip their skins and leave great gashes in their hide. And they would be taken to be doctored, and they would stay a certain time being doctored. And then when they walked out, people would touch them, and the people had touched me were healed of whatever disease. Now, that is the Sun Dance of old. Today it's quite similar. But nowhere have I received the original meaning of the Sun Dance. Hear me, brothers and sisters, hear me, Brulotta. We, most of us, did not know how to write. I said most of us. The Cherokee had writing on before white men are built. And so in the Crees in Canada, actual writing, not petroglyphs, but you people don't know that. But nevertheless, there might have been others as well, these two are normal. But nevertheless, due to the fact that we did not have writing, and those that did have writing, it was in a society, secret society, that they didn't pass on to those outside of the society. So you might as well say even those that had writing had no writing, because the vast majority had no way. And then on petroglyphs, scratchings on walls. So we had no way to write the things that we knew. And so we do, now hear me, we do ceremony in remembrance of all these sacred things that we've learned. Ceremonies basically are acting out a play. But over the years, the play acting out of the Sun Dance, has lost its meaning, just as it did with the Maya and the Aztec. And instead of S-O-N, they went S-U-N. And what this is all about, hear me. And those who do not believe that the Bible is Indian, and those who do not believe that the Indian is not the Bible, you listen carefully and you start thinking about these things, please. Use your wisdom and hear me. The circle, the great circle, with a hole dug in its dead center, like most people are nations. This circle represented all life, every planet, every being on those planets, the stars, the rain, space, our own peoples, our own world, our sun, our galaxy, and beyond, our worms, everything that takes to make life, our trees, our clouds, our weathers. It represents everything, the all and never ending, the great circle of life. All life. Life beyond what the norm thinks exists. Believe me, there certainly are other people. We are not all. But that's up to you. You have to reject it, your past. And, by the way, I want all to understand, this one does not want you to believe a word I say. Hear me. Don't believe a word I say. Test it through prayer, through study, through contemplation. Test it and find out if read up speech through or with spoken, split tongue. Just don't go on saying right up that dumb. Don't be that dumb. Denominations are started because people were that dumb. Somebody said something and everybody grabbed onto it. Religions are started from the same thing. Don't be stupid. Believe not a word I say. I would expect more from you people, the human race, than what so many are showing. Right, with that over. The great circle was made, prepared, sanctified, prayed over, cleansed. The tree had been found, the virgin. striking of the tree with the hatchet, the tomahawk, was her striking the one that her enemy, that section of that piece of wood that killed her son, that was killed on. Her frustrations, her pain was taken out upon that piece of wood, in this case, the tree.
Tell me your great secrets deep inside your heart.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
That tree was green and heavy, but it makes their workload light. fanfare would leap onto the circle, and with great fanfare plant its foot without falling into that hole prepared for it. The tree represented the cross. It had no cross arm, but it was wood, and it was for the same cause, death. Let those preparing to pray in this manner, they pierce themselves. Christ himself was pierced. I said pierce themselves. More often than not, they were pierced by others, as the Christ was. And they were connected to the tree, to this great cross without arms, as the Christ was, but not nailed up. They were connected with the long knife and with great thick swords through muscle and fat and skin and tied. And they began their dancing. They began their praying. They began whistling their whistles of eagle feather whistles for to hide their pain and stuff as they went about so they could shout in agony. They would cry to the great Creator with these wonderful whistles. They would be as the eagle who flies so high. Here in America, one of the highest flyers. Not the highest flyers of Earth, but the highest flyers here in America. The messenger is the one that knew God best because he rose high to him. And then, when it was time, their days of fasting, they were not drinking, they were not eating. As the Christ himself went into the wilderness and not drink and not eat and prayed, they did this too at this time. And they prayed for their own needs, maybe, but generally they were praying for others. And the Christ was praying for others. And then 3 days, they would undo themselves by pulling back, and if they couldn't get back, people would come and grab them, and still do, and pull them for them, ripping those things apart, ripping their hide. Then these people were taken in their exhausted form, and still are, into the wigwams, into the teepees, into the whatnot to be doctored and tended in old days, but 3 days and 3 nights. I don't know about today. I think it varies. And then they would emerge. Christ was in the cave, in his own burial tomb, for 3 days and 3 nights. And then he emerged and walked the earth, Pequa, alive, thunderbirds, and a chicken name. Son of God. Alive. And they come out alive. They had gone through their hell. They had gone through their death. They have gone and prayed. They have prayed for others. They have prayed even for themselves on occasion. And they had died the death without the death. For that death can only be done one time. And that's the only time it ever needs to be done. And ever has been done. But they represent him. They are at that moment what is called Christians. The word Christian means Christ's follower. It doesn't mean these people that go to church and stab each other in the back during the week. I love you, brother. I love you, sister. What the hell were you doing in that church across the street last week? You know we're the only right ones. No, no, I'm not talking about those kind of so-called Christians. Christian means Christ follower. And Christ with love on two legs. And in that way, they were Christians. And in that way, they are Christians. They are following the way of love. Praying for one another. Praying for the needs. Praying for help and hope. And they have gone through great torment to do this. And believe me, my brothers and sisters, white, red, green, yellow, plaid, whatever. They do this for you. Some of them will do it just for their own red race. slept with each other in the Red World. Shame on all of us. Now, the Sun Dance was S-O-N, not S-U-N. The story that the ceremony was to make the people remember was the story that you can read in the Good Book alone. Do not tell me that the Good Book is not Indian, and that Indian is not the Good Book. You remember Pequot. You remember Sundance. You remember the Aztec, the Maya. You remember the Tlingit. Tlingit, Tlingit. They don't make the key sound. The West Coast, who have their own stories of death and resurrection. You remember the people of the Hopi. You remember the people of the Arapaho, the Navajo, the Apache. You remember those down there. They too have their own stories, their own mythologies, lost over time from the original. Now use your brains and set those brains at work trying to find the connection from the Good Book to your mythology. Because your mythology started on fact, as all mythologies start on fact. So, that is the story of the combination, the bridging between the White World and the Indian World, the world that has been fought over for ages, the world of the so-called, we're right, we're you're wrong, Bible. Oh, what a bunch of crap that is. Nobody's right, and yet everybody's right to a form. Nobody's wrong, and yet everybody's wrong to a form. We are one. We are the Tarquiwashi, one religion. All of us have been born in the same mind womb of the Creator. You know I would exist if He didn't want to take us into existence. It is a womb up there, and you and I came from it. I don't care your color. I don't care how much you hate or love me. I don't care. We are brothers and sisters, whether you like it or not. The Creator is my Creator, is your Creator, is our Creator. The 13 in our Iokas followed the Christ and learned that I have shared with you. And he left, said I'd come back. One day, we thought he did. We made a big mistake. His name was not Jesus, his name was Cortez. So we were wrong. But don't give up hope, brothers and sisters. He didn't tell you when he came back. And we do make many, many mistakes. We have made many mistakes. You and I, the individual, be your own creed, your own race. And I'm not talking to the red man. I'm talking to all men. We make mistakes all the time. Yes, we made a big mistake, the Indians of the Americas. We thought that Christ had come back and it was Cortez. We screwed up royal. We screwed up big time. But he said he'd be back, and as I said, he did not say when. So don't give up hope. He is coming. He is the Son of God in his beginning. God doesn't lie. Creator does not lie. He just didn't say when he was coming back. He's in calendar on his word, though. And, well, mistakes happen. Mistakes have happened in the past. Mistakes happen every minute of the day. Worldwide, as well as individually. Live by your mistakes, learn by them, my brothers and sisters. See them as a gift from the Creator. A goof the way that it's brought out, God is not an Indian giver. He does not take away what he gave. Your self-will. So he will not go against your self-will. He will come in. He will possess you. He will not take away your self-will. He will be in you to help you when you call him. Ask for help. Then he will do so. Until hopefully you realize he's always there because you've asked him now. And he's never gone against your will. You've tested that thousands of times. And you like what you have in you and you want to change. That's when you let him start really living in your life. But that, again, is not religion. That's just the way it is. Mind you, I did not tell you to go down to the Catholic Church, the Mormon Church, the Protestant Church. I didn't tell you to go to any churches, any denomination, any religion, be it Muslim, be it Buddhist, be it whatnot, Christian or Indian. And by the way, the Indian is not a religion, it's a tradition. And, no, I have not pointed you that way. I hope not go that way. Because to me, I find that has been a flytrap. And the great wonderful spider has made that great wonderful web in you. They lure people in and they get all covered and shrouded with that wonderful, wonderful spider webbing and feel all cuddly and sweet and sensible, good. Unfree to fly. Doesn't mean that you don't go to these places. Just means to watch out and get full of spiders. And all that happy little purring inside the cocoon of death that the flies have been trapped in. The lures come to my church. It just means that they're trapped. But purity, the way of Ishikano, the way the inner Iokas were taught, meant that you are free. We are salvated, not just no salvation. Salvated means to be a free thinker. And Ishikano, the veil teacher, was a free thinker in typhoid.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
End of part one. Please refer to program notes for the scheduled date and time of part two. Thank you for supporting Prophecy Keepers Radio with your tax-deductible offerings to the Oklava Native American Church of the White Roots of Peace.
Let the truth be known to all mankind again.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper. Let the truth